This is Sportsline on WRMJ.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
614-0-RUN in Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
And by office specialists in Galesburg and Advanced Business Systems in Moline, your headquarters for office supplies, computer sales, and service, phone systems, sharp copiers, promotional materials, and more.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge!
Now, from the WRMJ studios in downtown Aledo, here's Jim Taylor with Sportsline.
All right, the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a tradition that began way back in 1979 with this great local radio station signed on. Local sports on a Saturday morning. How about that? Been doing it a long time as our final Saturday of April. Just several sports lines remaining for the 2023-2024 school year. And before we bring in Ty Taylor on the program today, we'll visit with Logan Lee. Caught up with him earlier this week. I don't know if it was Monday or Tuesday. He was still in North Liberty, Iowa. I know the NFL draft resuming at 11 o'clock this morning. They thought he'd probably go Saturday, and that's rounds 4 through 7. So we'll get some audio from Logan Lee. Really a nice conversation with him today. And then also, I was able to track down John Elder this week, of course, the coaching legend from Alexis, and I was thinking about 2024, specifically the 50th anniversary of the IHSA football playoffs, the first year, 1974. So I thought, hey, let's talk a little bit about him, talk to him a little bit about what was going on in the spring of 1974 in advance of the first ever IHSA football playoffs. So a great resource there. So that's kind of our outline for today, but again, the NFL draft resuming at 11 o'clock this morning. And I know Ty Taylor, we bring him, spring sports starting to wind down. I think next week we have the IHSA girls track sectionals taking place. I see the IHSA bass fishing sectionals are this week, and the 2023-2024 school year starting to get away from us, right?
Yeah, it's crazy how fast it goes, you know, doing this. Like, you're just around a lot of events throughout the school year, obviously. And just like I always say, the spring sports season goes so fast because it feels like it doesn't get really started in full swing for a long time. And then once it does, you just play and play and play. And then all of a sudden you look up and, like, you know, where we are now, like, what, it's 2 or 3 weeks away from postseason games getting underway already, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, like you said, I think, you know, definitely good luck to Logan Lee today. Really cool that it looks like he'll probably get selected. So going from Orion High School to the NFL, pretty cool. So congratulations to him, and good luck today with the draft. Really, really cool, I think.
Yeah, and I see his one teammate, Cooper DeJean, he was selected yesterday. So, you know, he has some pretty good stories coming up about his first memories of, like, playing football competitively. So I think that's pretty neat. And I think he said in the interview, which is so awesome, he started the final 41 games in a row at Iowa.
Wow.
And how great that is, and having an impact, because people can criticize the Iowa offense as much as they want, but Iowa's defense, yeah, was stout compared to any defense in the country, and he played right in the middle of that. So we'll visit with him about that. And again, rounds 4 through 7 today, beginning at 11 o'clock this morning. By the way, you know, reflecting back to winter sports, congratulations to Coach Tim Seedam, Illinois Basketball Coaches Association District Coach of the Year. Awesome and deserving honor. Yep. I really think he's done a great job with the program here in Aledo. I think he's assembled a great staff. And I know they lost a bunch this year, but I still think that team with what he's been able to establish. I think they'll surprise some people next year. So deserving honor for him.
Yeah, and that was in, I think, District 11 for the IBCA and 2A, and also Riverdale's Alex Kelly won that. Congratulations to him as well. Very well deserving for both, without a doubt. So, yeah, exciting stuff. And, I think, like you said, a deserving honor for Coach Cheatham. I think they won 26 games, which set a school record. They had a 17-game winning streak in there in the second half of the season, too, and then won the LTC regular season and tournament titles for the second year in a row. So very successful seasons, two in a row for Mercer County. And looking forward to see what that program can do moving to the track next year.
It may be a possession away from playing in Canton.
Absolutely.
This year. You know, the basketball thing this week was a little bit surprising for me in terms of the length of the extension for the IHSA this week, announcing a 5-year extension for the state boys basketball tournament in Champaign. So to me, that tells me the state basketball tournament is there to stay in Champaign. Because it's interesting, I've heard a little bit of rumble about some people saying, man, that needs to go back to Peoria.
I've seen...
where were you 8 years ago?
The majority of people, I feel like, have been saying that.
And
from what I've seen.
Well, and I would say, to defend Peoria a little bit, is if they would have got the same setup that the IHSA has now with when they moved it back to Champaign, where you're playing the four state title games on the same day, I think they'd probably get similar type of crowds. The crowds haven't been great for Thursday and Friday games, really, at State Farm Center. But they buried the lead. So to me, they're going to change the schedule format because they basically set it in the last sentence, which means to me, you know, they said they're going to basically evaluate the schedule set up on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's still going to be 3 days, but and they'll still have the four state title games on Saturday. But I think they're going to reconfigure how those semifinal and third place games are played. To me, that last paragraph in that press release says they're going to make a change.
Well, I think so, too. And when we had the chance to talk with Kurt Gibson at the state tournament, too, that's kind of what he was alluding to, I thought. And I think that they know that that's something they probably need to change just because of how late it goes into the night. And like we've touched on a couple times this year, the semifinal game starting at 9:30 in the morning, I think is a shame to the schools that qualify and get down there. But you figure that it's probably going to stay in Champaign for a while. But when you look at like whether, you know, like you said, people are, I've seen a lot of people say that they enjoyed it in Peoria better. And I think to that point,
because
like,
of the downtown.
Well, yeah, there's no question.
Do they got a Rudy's in downtown Peoria?
There's no question. There's a lot more to do like in Peoria, the city, the surrounding area from the Carver Center, the Civic Center. But like when you look at like Champaign, obviously the big draw is the kids get to play on the University of Illinois basketball court, which I think is a big deal. And I think when you talk about like, I think kids would prefer to play at the State Farm Center without a doubt than to the Peoria Civic Center. But I do think like for a fan perspective in Peoria, it was probably a little better just because, you know, like I said, there's more to do in Peoria and they had the experience in like that exhibit hall, which was, you know, no fun for like kids and stuff. But, and like you said, I agree that if they had the format that they do now in Peoria, I think the attendance probably would have been a lot better for those Saturdays if they had just the four state title games. Because remember, Peoria had it when there was the two separate weekends, which I think really hurt the attendance too.
Yeah, and I'll say this again, and it's interesting that people are saying, and I'm not here to argue one way or the other, because I don't care where it's at. I like high school basketball. I went to Peoria every year. I'll go to Champaign every year because regardless of venue, basketball in the state's been great.
Yeah.
Whatever level. But I just find it a little bit, I'm not going to say comical, but a little irony when they say, oh man, Peoria, it's like, well, where were you?
Right.
I mean, nobody's going at the end of that. I mean, I'm talking about like when Derrick Rose was playing John Shire, there was nobody at those games, or Jalen Brunson.
Right.
You know, he scored 53.
What was there?
2,000
56.
People. Yeah. There were 2,000 people at that game.
And that was against Jahlil Okafor and Whitney Young.
It was Mr. Bass. So, I mean, that to me falls on deaf ears a little bit. But, you know, a five-year extension, I was surprised at the length, and it looks like they've already confirmed that they're going to extend. They haven't announced it yet. They're working, they're negotiating, but it's going to be back at CEFQ or Redbird Arena for the girls' basketball state tournament. And I told Brian Roosh this week at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I think Peoria, to me, they should apply for that girls' state tournament with the Renaissance Coliseum on the Bradley campus that seats about 5,000. Beautiful, brand-new facility, and I think that would be a great home for the girls' basketball state tournament. But ISU and Bloomington Normal, they've done a great job with not only the state girls' basketball tournament, but they've done a great job hosting the state volleyball tournament for over the years. Also, I was going to bring up staying on basketball, and I was so mad I caught the tail end of it last night, like the last 20 minutes, and I got a DVR. It's on again in early May. Quad Cities PBS, WQPT, they produced the documentary on Wharton Fieldhouse, and I saw like the final, like I said, 20 minutes. Man, so cool that they did that. Have you seen any of the media publicity about that?
No, I just saw that they're doing it. I haven't like seen any clips.
So
or
it's a lot of like first person accounts. And at the end of it, so like all these like legends about Wharton Fieldhouse, and they were talking to the former girls basketball coach, and I was going to call him up and say, "What in the world? What story were you telling?" He told a story that one of the great stories about Wharton Fieldhouse is Babe Ruth was traveling through the Quad Cities. And he was at a train station or something, and he hit a baseball and it landed on the roof of Wharton Fieldhouse. I'm like, wait, what?
Is it still up there?
No, I don't know. So you hear those type of stories, but a lot of like, you know, not only just basketball, but what kind of that facility represented just basically in the lore of the Quad Cities. So it's a documentary on Wharton Fieldhouse. It debuted last night. I think it's on in early May again. So there's several other times when it runs. So I'll tell our listening audience, you know, search it on WQPT and record it when it airs again.
And Wharton's so cool. Like, if you've never been there for a high school basketball game, you should. Like, we've been pretty lucky the past few years with, like, the level of program that Rock Ridge has been, that they've been able to just play Moline in regular season games there. And then they've been a part of that shootout the Wharton puts on every year, and Sherrard was scheduled to be a part of that this year, but then it got snowed out. But it's really unique when you go there. It feels like you're in like a college setting with the seating, the scoreboard, I mean everything. It's just a perfect atmosphere, really cool, and one of the best, if not like the best places for high school basketball in the state. It's really cool. I wish they'd get like a small school super sectional there.
Well, and they used to play postseason games there, and I can't remember if it was the sectional or super sectionals. Like, so like when Sherrard went to state in the early 90s when Eric Lawson and Eric Hutchins played, that was the super sectional site, I think, that year when they played River Ridge. So it has served as postseason venues for small school basketball from back in the day. In the original home of what are they now, the Atlanta Hawks, were the Moline Blackhawks, the fledgling NBA at the time for Wharton Fieldhouse. But anyway, that's something worth watching for, just kind of the lore of the Quad Cities with what Wharton Fieldhouse represents.
Well, and then coming up this week too, the postseason seeding is done for IHSA baseball and softball. I believe the seeds are out on Tuesday with the pairings out on Wednesday. Do you want to go through this whole seeding process and how it works, and then I put together a little projection for us what I think it will be if I had a vote.
Yeah, well, and it works like basically basketball, right? Subsectional, and basically subsectional defined as two regionals. So the top four in the subsectional, the one and the four normally are split up. They go to one regional site. The two and the three seeds go to the other regional site, and then the rest of the teams are filtered out based on geography. But again, I wish the IHSA moving forward would do the true seeding for the subsectional moving forward and do it that way, and maybe they will someday, but I know they've talked about that. But that's basically how it works. So I would think clearly in baseball and softball, Sherrard will be a one seed in baseball, Rock Ridge will still be a one seed in softball. They don't have the match up with Sherrard, right, until after the
correct
subsectional seeding takes place.
Well, too, and then when you talk about the seeding, too, the way it's done, just for people, if they don't know, like, the every team in the, well, every coach in the subsectional seeds it, and then it's just the average of where you were seeded. You know, so, like, for the local baseball subsectional, there's 11 schools. For softball locally, for us in 2A, there's 10. So we'll start in baseball here and tell you who the schools are and where we think they'll be seeded at. So Sherrard, the teams that are in this subsectional are Sherrard, Rock Ridge, Mercer County, Orion, IVC, Bureau Valley, Hall, Princeton, Monmouth, Roseville, Kewaunee, and Knoxville. And then the two regional sites, which is pretty crazy, which will be interesting to see how they do this, is Princeton and Hall in Spring Valley. So basically, when you look at the, like, the geography of where those towns are, Spring Valley and Princeton, they're the easternmost towns in the subsectional, right?
Yeah.
So basically, every school, I would think, because I was looking at this, is closer to Princeton than Spring Valley. Because you got to go basically right through Princeton to get to Spring Valley from where everybody else is located. So for you, I mean, how do you think they'll split that up? I mean, every school is closer to Princeton than Hall.
Yeah, I
right?
don't know.
I mean, it'll be really interesting. So for me,
and maybe they'll do the true, just let it roll with the true seating.
Yeah, that would be
just
fun.
One exit apart, basically.
But
when
the way I look at it is, I think they'll probably just do the schools that aren't in the top four that are like the closest to Hall, like, so they would go a little bit further through Princeton to Spring Valley. But the way that I see the baseball subsectional seating playing out, and I don't know if anybody cares what I think, but I think, like you said, Sherrard is a clear-cut number one seed. Hall, I think, will be seated second, with IVC seated third. Bureau Valley swept Princeton this week, so they moved up to the fourth seed for me. Princeton at five, Monmouth Roseville seated six, Mercer County at seven, Kewaunee at 8, followed by Rock Ridge at 9, Orion at 10, and Knoxville at 11. So the way that would, well, I guess we don't even need to get into what we think the postseason pairings would be, because, like I said, with that two regional sites, it's hard to see where teams are going
to
go.
Well, and to me, I think the greater story in baseball for the postseason is always, you know, one, weather is such a key in baseball, because it can impact those schools that don't have a lot of pitching, mm-hmm. and they want rainouts so they can bring their top pitcher back if they get an extra day, or if you're tracking, you know, the pitch count issue. And I know you and Coach Cook were talking about it on a broadcast, especially those teams that, like, have a legitimate ace,
yep.
but the rest of their staff isn't good. Do you, especially if you have that semifinal game, do you roll the dice and say, we're going to save the ace to see if we can get to the regional championship and use him there? Or do we throw him in the semifinals to get to the regional championship game? And that's always, in baseball, you know, it's 50-50 on how you approach that.
Yeah, because I remember Sherrard last year, they pitched Aiden Taranez in the regional semifinal and won, obviously, and then they won the regional championship with Maddox Harkson pitching. And I really think both of those kids are very, and Sherrard is pretty fortunate. They have a lot of solid pitching, but obviously Taranez is on a different level than the rest of the kids they have, and pretty much basically everybody else in the area at the 2A level. So it'll be interesting to see when they throw him, when the postseason comes around, because, like I said, they're easily the top seed, and I think a pretty heavy favorite to win the regional, and maybe even the favorite in the whole sectional complex too. They're very, very good. I really think that they have a chance to, I keep saying this on our broadcast to them, I think they really have a chance to make a very special and memorable run here in a couple of weeks in baseball.
Oh, I mean, you look at the season they put together so far. What is it, 17?
17 and 2.
Yeah. And, you know, again, just in baseball, it's that, you know, if you just that day get the ace of the other team who has his greatest game, then your season can end. I've seen that happen in baseball, especially, so many times over the year, because, well, you look at just the inconsistency of a lot of teams that have had rainouts and haven't played a lot, and they're just looking for the opportunity to play a lot of games. And basically, by the end of the year, maybe you get that final couple of weeks where you're playing a lot of games where you don't get that early in the year. So I think baseball is always an interesting sport when the postseason rolls around. Of course, softball, much more different. It's basically your ace, here's the ball, go out and take the ball. And, you know, everybody thought the, you know, maybe the sky was falling when Rockridge got upset with the loss to Ridgewood, but I think a lot of that has been hushed here as we've gone along in the last
And Ridgewood's still undefeated. They're very good.
Yeah.
I mean, but softball, the local subsectional, as you mentioned, softball has 10 teams in it. Those being Mercer County, Sherrard, of course, the three-time defending state champs, Rock Ridge, Orion, Monmouth, Roseville, Kewaunee, Riverdale, Alleman, Knoxville, and then the Brimfield Elmwood Co-op as well. And this is a little difficult because there's a lot of, I think, pretty solid teams in this subsectional. Rock Ridge clearly will be the top seed. And then 2 through 4, I think, could really go any way. I have Sherrard at 2 with Brimfield Elmwood at 3, Knoxville seeded 4th. Mercer County for me is seeded 5th with Kewaunee 6, Riverdale at 7, Orion at 8, Alleman at 9, and then Monmouth-Roseville at 10. And then the two regional sites for the softball subsectional are Rock Ridge and Riverdale in Port Byron. The sectional would be in Peoria, super sectional, East Peoria State Tournament in Peoria as well. And then for baseball, it was the sectional in Chillicothe, super sectional in Geneseo, and then the state tournament in Peoria as well. So what do you think about softball?
Well, I think the one interesting team for me is Knoxville.
Yeah.
You know, not, you know, looking at kind of their softball heritage over the years, and then, well, I see they were winning a lot of games, but then the kind of the one result that really kind of drew attention to me is they swept West Central, who's a really solid 1A program. And then what Riverdale played, one of the games against Rock Ridge was pretty competitive.
Took them to extra innings, and then they split with Sherrard this week.
Yeah, so that's one of those other teams you look at in terms of, you know, in terms of their ace. And, you know, to me, softball, too, is if you can, especially early in games, if you get an opportunity, if you're playing that top seed, you gotta score early. Like if you're playing Kendra Lewis, if you get runners at first and second with one out in the first, you got to score off her.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, she'll shut you down late in the game. So I think the softball subsectional complex is going to be very compelling this year. Rockridge is still the team to beat.
Yep.
And this isn't like meant as disrespect, but I'm sure a lot of people will take it. I think the gap is been closed a little bit compared to you know, past years where they walked on the field and, you know, well, they're going to be playing at Eastside Center in the super sectional, and then they'll be down at Louisville Slugger Complex again this year. Now, I still believe they're in position to do that again this
year because they've got the best pitcher in the state. Yep.
And I think she wants to go out to say, I did it 4 years in a row.
That'd be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
Yep. That'll be quite a story to follow here in a couple weeks with them. And too, I think when you talk about them too, you can't say enough about the postseason experience that those kids have and have grown up around and have been a part of. I mean, even, you know, some of those younger kids that were just kids that were in the dugout the last couple years, I mean, still. I mean, we talked with Taylor Dietrich this week, and she said, you know, how much of like an eye-opening experience it was. Because her freshman year, she was just like a courtesy runner. And then last year, of course, she was started at third base. But, you know, she said just there's so much you learn from being a part of runs like that. And I really think that's the other big advantage they have, too, is they've been there and done that. And the stage, I don't think, could ever be too big for those kids, you know.
Yeah, and then, too, there's a – to me – even though the new coach was on the staff, to me, it takes some time to say, well, now I'm the head coach in terms of transitioning from the former head coach, John Nelson. So there, I don't call it growing pains, but there's going to be an adjustment period for that. But yeah, there's no question they're still the team to beat. So we have then our local broadcast schedule. We got one game next week.
Two.
Two.
Scheduled for two. We'll see if... So we have definitely Sherrard and Ridgewood in softball, which Sherrard is hosting that game Wednesday, which should be a pretty good game. And then we're going to try to do Mercer County and West Central in softball this week. The game we would do would be in Stronger, we're going to have to wait and see.
We got to borrow Gary Unsworth's phone. That's the last time I did something.
Or if there's internet service out there, we'll see.
Kirby got to run. He got to hardwire that thing and run an extension from Bigsville.
So that broadcast Thursday is not a definite thing that we're doing. We're going to try everything we can. If it's feasible, we'll do it.
Is that a doubleheader?
No, it's just they play Tuesday and Thursday. But Tuesday we've got a Cardinals game early in the evening, so we are unable to bring you high school softball that day. And then the other thing too, I think when you talk about our coverage, I'm excited because I'm not just saying this, I truly believe that, now if you remember the basketball season for the first time ever, we had two regional championship games at the same time. And I think we this year, I assume probably for the first time ever, I really do believe that we'll have two super sectional games on the same day.
Have they set the times for the baseball,
softball?
No,
not yet. But I really think that we will have a baseball team in the super sectional, a softball team in the super sectional, too.
And
I'm not willing to go further than that yet. But
are they Memorial Day games?
Yeah.
Where are you going to go, Geneseo? Or are you
we'll have to see.
Where's the super sectional? Eastside Center? Or no, Louisville Slugger Complex.
Eastside Center.
Okay.
I think I really hope that that's something that we would get. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think there's a great opportunity that's going to happen.
I hope so. And last year we were so close because Sherrard, I mean, they were just a couple of bounces away from getting to the super sectional last year.
That was the Spring Valley Hall game.
Matt Rosetich, yeah. They're so good, and I really like what Rock Ridge and Sherrard have done in softball too. And Mercer County's coming on well too. I think they struggled a little bit early, but have kind of turned it on. They, you know, still have to play West Central this week, so we'll see how they compete with them. And then
now, have they played Knoxville?
They play them, I think, at the very end of the regular season. So, and I know for them, you know, they beat A-Town, who's solid, which is good, because before that, I think all like the good teams they had played, they had lost to. So, I don't want to say turning it around because it's not like things were like bad, but they're, I think, kind of playing more up to the potential we thought they'd have than they were earlier in the year.
Well, I love the one box score when they played the doubleheader game called Due to Darkness.
Yeah, right.
Get lights, A-Town.
Well, that was the thing last year that I guess...
What are they playing at? Are they playing Avon?
I have no idea. But I know that, like last year... I just wish, and I know not everybody has them, but I think it's too bad when the postseason sites don't have lights.
Yeah, so you play it, you know, later game so people can get to it.
Right, and I think it'd be cool if they did like the doubleheaders on the semifinal day or whatever, but because I think too, you know, like baseball is a sport especially where you really are at a disadvantage if you have to play quicker together because the team's probably harder to get pitchers back if you only have the one day off, you know, but. Anyway, that's just the thing that I always complained about, is I wish that postseason baseball and softball games were played at night under the lights. We don't get enough baseball and softball under the lights. I love when they play at night.
Yeah, I've always said that.
I love the atmosphere. I just feel it's better.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Could you ever imagine, you know, what would crowds be for a high school football game if it was played on a Friday night at 4:30?
Yeah, right.
Be far different than it is, and that's the disadvantage of, or you know, even talk about basketball, you know, if you had to play at 4:30. And yeah, I mean especially in the postseason, you'd like to see those opportunities where you can
and even like
a 6 o'clock
and
start.
I get why they have to do it that way because not every school has lights for baseball and softball, but I wish that in the postseason, like, is more of like I think it'd be a more special type feel too, because you don't ever get to do it, that I think it would be pretty fun if they were able to play, like, you know, 7 o'clock first pitches or whatever in the postseason, just for, like I said, I love baseball under the lights. Maybe that just is a weird, like, thing.
No, I agree. But, okay. I agree 100%.
Yeah. And softball, too, of course. But, yeah, I'm excited for the postseason. I think we have some very good teams. And Rock Ridge Baseball got the DeCarroll kid back pitching. They swept Monmouth Roseville this week. So I think they're even a team.
They're a wild card, especially
like,
if you get an
ace. The pitching he has and the you know, potential that Schweigen has as a pitcher. I just think two kids like that, I mean, they'd be kind of dangerous, I think, you know, in the postseason, because I mean, those kids can shut you down on the right day, right? So, in Mercer County, I know we had them on this week in baseball, and they got kind of thumped by Sherrard like everybody else has, but they're playing for a conference title in their division of the Lincoln Trail today against United, a doubleheader there. So we'll see. I think they won the conference outright, or their side of the conference outright last year in baseball. So good luck to them today on that as well.
Well, that's impressive. They're able to play that game today.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have coming up on the program Logan Lee, an Orion Charger, and former Orion Charger, former Iowa Hawkeye, and an NFL draft prospect. What do you think about that? And also we'll hear from the great John Elder from Alexis, Illinois. I always like how he says the word consequently. And he always says, of course, youngster. And one of my favorite stories that Pat Elder always tells about his dad. So when Pat Elder was coaching at Sherrard, he was young in his coaching career, and John Elder was an assistant coach for him. And he said one day that Pat and John were having a conversation about strategy, and John Elder said to Pat, he said, well, you're the head coach. You know, the final decision rests with you. And Pat Elder looked at his dad and said, don't you forget it.
Also, before we go to break, I think you'll think this is funny. I just looked at my phone, and I have 3 text messages. All of them are from Mercer County's athletic director and softball coach, Justin Murray. And he answered 3 of our questions in, like, the span of 90 seconds. So first, all he said was Mirko greater than Cardinal baseball, which I agree with, of course.
Yeah, amen,
but
brother.
I'm not in charge, so don't get mad at me for that decision that we make. You can take that up with the higher-ups here. He then answered that they play in Abingdon, A-Town softball, and then he said,
shoot, I thought they played in Avon.
And then he described the ending of the game that was called due to darkness. He said, had to play travel ball hurry style to push a run across because it was a one-run game.
I love it.
That is very funny. That's you. I love the interaction we get sometimes. Right. That's really funny. And then Jansen Bender, I haven't mentioned this yet. He this week sent me a Pancheros gift card.
If he's listening, I have an issue with him because he needs to tell Brian Hutton. And now, mind you, Pancheros wasn't open in 2001, but Hutton owes me like a Panchero every week since we broadcast the 2001 Alleman Sherrard game. And Jansen Bender owes me that too because he was part of that broadcast. That's where his love of double.
And I love Jansen. Whenever we're gonna do a game, it seems like he always shows up. He has a purple WRMJ hoodie that he wears. It's amazing. I love it.
Well, what's the deal with them? They grill out in the outfield.
They did for that doubleheader, and they did me to the, what do they call it, the Sherrard Dads Club. They invited me to the night they played for the regional title in boys basketball. They like rented the Farmington Pizza Company, and I didn't have time to get over there before the game, but I was like, man, because he texted me like when I was on my way there. He's like, hey, you got time to stop by? And I'm like, I wish I did, but yeah, that's cool. And then they got like the logo, the Sherrard logo on the grill that the welding class did for him. It's pretty cool, yeah.
Awesome.
So anyway, all right. So Logan Lee, again, best of luck to him today. So cool if he gets – it'd be cool to see his name get called today.
That'd be excellent, man.
I know the people in Orion, Coach Filler, everybody's super proud of him. Have you talked to Coach Filler at all?
Oh, yeah. They have a great long-lasting relationship. And I love the – well, the one story I told about Logan Lee is we'll get to the interview is – you know, when I remember when he played, you think because you just cover small school football, I'm like, man, what a big dude. But then I look now at, like, back then when some of those memories come up, and I'm like, man, he wasn't very big. Like,
oh, yeah, compared to now, yeah.
Big Ten, but anyway.
Right.
So awesome for him and his family. And a tip of the cap to Mitch Lee, his dad, and his mom kind of setting that up for us. And he was so I did the interview. He lives in North Liberty, Iowa, and we were doing the interview that day. He called me like late afternoon. I was mowing the grass, and he's like, hey, can you talk now? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I went and recorded, and so we talked 16 minutes on the air, and I talked to him probably about another 10 minutes off the air. So anyway, pretty awesome.
Super cool. And then, like you said, John Elder and you and Brian are talking about the state basketball tournament staying in Champaign, right?
Yeah, and then we have our picks for the bass fishing sectionals because he has one in pool 13 and then awesome. Our is in pool 18.
That's like in Savannah or where?
Yeah, it's just south of the Quad Cities. So they're are south of Savannah. So there's Jason Kellett with a shot.
He thumbs up. He gave us a thumbs up.
So their pool 13 is basically kind of how Mercer County got Pool 18, or United's the official host, but the launch is from New Boston. That's, I think, Thursday, so that's awesome. That's coming here. But anyway, we'll get to our interviews.
All right. So Logan Lee coming up next. Of course, Orion High School graduate, University of Iowa standout as well. Looks like he's on track to get drafted today on the final day of the NFL draft. We'll hear from him next on WRMJ.
Jimmy is the kind of guy that always parks his car in the garage if he hears there's a chance of hail. You know, cautious. Jimmy had a wife, a new baby, and needed insurance, but said, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But then he found out about return of premium term insurance from Country Financial. After 20 years, you get a tax-free lump sum payment of everything you put in. Jimmy liked that. If that sounds like your kind of country, why don't you call your nearest Country Financial representative for all the details on return of premium insurance. Then relax and have a piece of cake. Jimmy did.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
When it comes to document imaging technology, it's best to deal with a local company. A local company like Office Specialist. Office Specialist has sharp copier printers, color systems, and network printers, all supported by a local do-whatever-it-takes attitude to satisfy you, the customer. Office Specialist puts you, the customer, in charge, so you can make the document imaging decision that's best for your business. Sharp copier printers from Office Specialist. Visit osi.biz.
Are you ready to step into style? Look no further than 6140 Run, your go-to destination for the latest in footwear fashion. Right now, 6140 Run has a great selection of Hey Dude shoes. And here's the kicker. You can buy one pair of Hey Dudes and get the second pair 30% off. Hey Dude shoes are the perfect combination of comfort and trendiness. Don't miss out on the chance to upgrade your shoe game. Visit 6140 Run in Galesburg today to get your pair of Hey Dude shoes.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Great to get an opportunity to talk to Orion graduate Logan Lee, of course, a great Iowa Hawkeye, and getting set for the NFL draft later this week. So I guess the first question, Logan Lee, is tell us a little bit about your emotions right now gearing up for this thing.
Well, man, it's super excited, super nervous. You just have no idea where you end up. My wife and I have been talking about it, and it's just the uncertainty of where you'll live is the biggest thing. And then there's so much more that goes into it after that. It's like system. It's the instability of the job itself. It's like all that little stuff you wait for your whole life, and it's very nerve-wracking, but I'm super excited.
And in terms of when you talk about the season ending, the collegiate football season ending, and you know, we fast forward to April, what are some of the things you do to kind of get ready for this, you know, NFL draft and the different workouts you have? What's the kind of the preparation involved in all of that?
Yeah, so I ended up I was pretty fortunate. I ended up going to Florida. I was training at Fort Myers at a facility called X3. And they do a great job at just being able to help you develop and help you continue to progress your speed and your training stuff that you'll see at Pro Day and Combine. And then I was, like I said, I was very blessed again to be able to get invited to the Shrine Bowl. And I got invited to the Combine. I got invited to the, well, obviously Iowa's Pro Day I was able to go to. So all those things were just great opportunities for me to be able to showcase myself and be able to give myself a platform that I think I took advantage of each one of them. So I've been very fortunate there.
And then in terms of conversations that you've had with NFL teams during this process, what's that like in terms of, I guess, volume and in those opportunities?
Yeah, Jim, it's been crazy. It's there's a lot of contact, a lot of individuals that are interested. At the Shrine Bowl, I had 29 interviews. At the Combine, I had about 9 interviews. And since then, I've had well over a dozen follow-up interviews. I had a visit to Pittsburgh. I visited the Steelers. And then I've just been, this week's just been a lot of phone calls. of teams that I haven't even been in as much contact with about what my draft day phone number is and like who's my agent and stuff like that. So a lot of conversations, and just very, very fortunate to be able to have the platform and the opportunities I've been given. So,
man, how surreal is it hearing that? What's your draft day phone number? I mean, have you stepped back and said, because I don't think probably, and maybe you did when you went into Iowa, you thought, hey, my goal and my ambition, I'm going to play in the NFL one day. But when you hear, hey, what's your draft day phone number? And when you have those type of conversations, you have to feel really good about, I think, not only getting drafted, but to me, it sounds like if you're having those type of conversations, you know, playing in the league.
Yeah. It's encouraging for sure. By no means does it mean a whole lot, just because some teams might just have to do it as a contingency. Some teams might actually be doing it out of interest. So it's just, like I said earlier, the uncertainty is the real thing that kind of blows your mind when you think about it.
All right. So give me, I was thinking about this. So, you know, these like full circle moments and these opportunities. If I say, give me your first memory of playing competitive football. Now, I think Orion played like it can be flag football even, but I know I think Orion had the fifth and sixth grade, like Youth Sports Foundation football.
Yep.
Do like, if I say, hey, what's your first memory of playing organized football? Anything stand out to you?
I wouldn't say it's the earliest, but it's certainly one that's towards the beginning. Was I went to a Tim DeWitt football camp in Iowa, not at the university, wherever I don't even know where he's at. I was a kid, so. But I went to a Tim DeWitt football camp, and I ended up getting I went with one of my best buddies, too. So it was pretty cool being able to do that. And then I ended up, we had like a skills camp as well as like a couple like small tournaments with random drafts, and I got the MVP of that. I was pretty ecstatic for that. So that's one of my earliest ones. I think that was probably third grade, if I'm not mistaken.
That's awesome. And of course we know about what a great Hawkeye Tim DeWitt was too. And what about any other like memories, you know, at that really young age?
I just remember playing catch. So I didn't have a brother. Loved my sister to death, but didn't have a brother. Lived in the country. So I would spend hours and hours throwing the football off my roof and standing under the gutter trying to, once I saw it, roll back down. And you know how unpredictable football is. You just playing catch with yourself all day long. Those are the things that I remember the most, those little things.
And then when you reflect, you know, on the journey for you, you know now that you made the right decision collegiately to play at Iowa. That was a good fit for you. And you never know with, you know, especially now with how the transfer portal works, with how everybody just transfer, but you started a Hawkeye and you finished a Hawkeye and you'll forever be a Hawkeye. When you think about that move and, you know, the decisions you had to make leading up to, you know, that college choice, do you look back and say, man, I'm thankful that I wound up where I wound up at collegiately?
Oh, absolutely. Just being able to be under I just love Coach Ferentz and the coaching staff, my Coach Bell, Coach Neiman, Coach Parker, Coach Wallace, like the whole defensive staff, the whole coaching staff in its entirety. Like just being able to be a part of a program that values the same stuff that I value has been incredible to be a part of. And they certainly have helped me accomplish a lot of the goals that I've set for myself, too. So that certainly helps, too.
If I say, and this is for small-town kids, and, you know, I think even a lot of fans, they don't realize what it takes to make it. And I'm talking about just, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, the opportunity of getting drafted in the NFL, but I'm talking about, too, playing at a high-level, top defense in the country.
Yeah.
So my question to you, and maybe it's not an easy answer, How did you do it?
Well, I've been very blessed with some good genetics, first of all. I've been very blessed with the way I've been raised and prioritizing work ethic and doing the right thing. And then I've just been very blessed with the opportunities I've been given. And I have a very, I would say I'm just very committed. And if I set my mind to something, there's not a whole lot that's going to stand in the way. And it's just the persistence and the consistency and the willingness to sacrifice some things that seem important that may not be, especially if those are the things that are going to pull you away from your ultimate goal. The willingness to do that's really what's allowed me to be able to separate myself.
All right. So I know it's a mental thing and a physical thing, both. And I don't know if it's like an equal balance. It probably is. But when did you know, again, coming from a small school, enrollment 300, and you're coming into a Big Ten high level defensive program. So when did you, like, was there a moment when you said, man, I belong? I mean, because I'm assuming there had to be some apprehension saying, hey, I'm a small town kid. Can I do this? And maybe not. I don't know. But when did you finally say, hey, I belong here? This kid from Orion, Illinois, that was throwing a football off the roof and catching it over and over. I belong, and I can play at a high level in a unbelievable football conference against the best in the country. So long question, but was there a moment where you say, maybe in a practice or something, like, hey, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to have an impact at this school, and I'm going to have an impact in this league?
Yeah. I would say, going in, I was always very confident in my abilities and my work ethic, and I was very confident my entire career that I was going to be able to do something. But when I really saw that it was my time to step up was that first season in 2021. It was the first season I started, and I was able to see it through, and I started the 41 consecutive games, never missing a start, played in every one, and that's not by accident by any means. So that's just really what has allowed me to really feel like that was the turning point for me, I guess, is that first start. Once you start and you're like, wow, this is not nearly as hard as I thought it was going to be. It's like, okay, I can do this, you know?
And then, you know, I've seen some pictures of you this week in your high school days at Orion. And I remember watching you play then, and mind you, you're in a small school conference in rural Illinois, and you think at the time, man, this is a big kid. And then I look at those high school pictures then, and I look, you know, now I'm like, well, that's not a very big kid when you think about playing in the Big Ten or playing in the NFL. So Can you speak to strength and conditioning and what all that takes, you know, playing at the level you're playing at?
Yeah. I would say preparation is key in anything you do, any area of life, and just being able to be able to take things seriously. If you really have interest in being able to perform at a high level and you want to have success in football or your occupation or anything, you just have to be willing to do the stuff that other people aren't. The little things that are the mundane, everyday things that anybody can do, but most people are not willing to do it just because it's not always the most most rewarding in the moment. Those are the things that I have always found that have allowed me to achieve the success I've had. And by all means, you have to be able to hang in there with your strength, and you have to be able to hang in there with endurance. And I've done pretty darn well in each of those areas, but it takes a whole lot more than just the physical accolades. It's just so much of it's just your consistency and your willingness to be able to go through stuff that others aren't, I'd say.
And then I was just going to ask, as we wind down here, we're talking to Logan on Tuesday, April 23rd of draft week. And he was outside. I don't know if he's mowing the grass in North Liberty, Iowa, or probably doing some football related thing or whatever. But I'm curious then, like in the conversations you've had with NFL people, have they said specifically, hey, we need to see this from you, or you need this, or you should really kind of focus on this? Or is it, you know, a lot of different things or some minute things? What have you heard, or what are they really looking for from you, and what do they want from you?
Yeah, every single team is going to have their own things. Some people, most people are just going to say, we need to see a little bit more of a pass rush. And I absolutely agree. It's given the circumstances and the system we had at Iowa, I was not able to fully showcase my talent. And when I was able to, I wouldn't say I entirely had nearly as much success as I was hoping when I did get the opportunity. So when I went to that Shrine Bowl down in Dallas, I was able to really show that I'm capable, I'm athletic, and that I'm willing to put in the work. So it's just a matter of when. It's like a lot of folks know that there's not a whole lot of time that you have to be able to accomplish this stuff. So once they tell me what I need to work on after, like, when I get the call to see who drafts me, I will then ask what I need to work on and then try to do as much of that as I can in the meantime, you know. It's very, very independent, I'd say.
And then I was going to ask you, too, then, in terms of, like, legacy Iowa players. You know, I was thinking, like, A.J. Mm-hmm. Epinesa. You played with him, right, if I remember correctly?
Yes, sir.
So yes, sir. Do you have, like, I'm assuming, you know, have you had some conversations with, like, him to say, hey, man, so what's the difference here? What, you know, you have any advice for me? Do you have some of those, like, conversations with guys that have played in the league?
Yeah, so Jack Campbell and Sam Laporta were both my wedding. Campbell's actually my best man in my wedding. So those are the two guys I always reach out to if I ever have any questions or need advice. They just recently gone through it, so they know the stress. They understand what all goes into it, you know.
All right, I was going to ask you, I'm assuming you're feeling it, right, from the people of Orion, the people from, you know, this area that saw you play in high school. They're all rooting for you. And I know this Hawkeye fan base is so loyal, and they follow kids. So tell us a little bit about that. What I'm saying, there's a lot of people in your army right now as you do this thing, right? You feeling that?
Yeah, definitely. My sports system's always been incredible. I've had games where I've had 120 people come and support and being willing to buy tickets and stuff. So it's like the sports system I have has never been a question. I've always been beyond blessed to have the people in my life that I do.
All right. Well, I know you got a lot going on this week. I appreciate you giving us some time. Saw you broadcast your games at Orion back in the day. Once a Charger, always a Charger. I always tell people former Orion Charger before I say former Iowa Hawkeye. But Logan, awesome following you, and I appreciate you giving us some time. I know everybody, like in our area, Alito, Rock Ridge, Sherrard, all these area schools that saw you play in high school, I know they're rooting for you too. So thanks for joining us today, and good luck to you this week.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
Again, Logan Lee with us on WRMJ.
Building relationships, supporting the community, and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Alito, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Big box and online stores seem to have it all, but they have great local customer service and support. When they don't see you face-to-face, how much can they really care or even actually help you? Office Specialist at Advanced Business Systems has it all, too. But they have even more. They see you. They'll take good care of you right here where you live and work for office supplies, furniture, promotional products, IT support, printing, mailing, janitorial supplies, and much more. OSI and Advanced Business Systems are your local partners for everything in the workplace. Visit osi.biz or stop in at Office Specialists in Galesburg and Advanced Business Systems Moline.
Spring is in the air, and it's time to take your workouts outdoors with 6140 Run. Introducing the latest arrivals at 6140 Run, the Brooks Glycerin 21, Mizuno Wave Horizon, and Saucony Ride 17. Whether you're hitting the pavement or tackling the trails, these top-of-the-line running shoes will keep you comfortable every step of the way. Don't let anything hold you back this spring. Take the first step at 6140 Run in Galesburg.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Well, coming up this fall, the fall of 2024, that'll mark the 50th year of the IHSA High School Football Playoffs. They started in 1974, and John Elder from Alexis, a key part of that process and implementing the system. And I was thinking earlier this week about, you know, kind of that era. So the fall of 1974, Coach Elder, the first year of the IHSA High School Football Playoffs, what was kind of going on leading up to that? Like, you know, if we go back 50 years in the spring of 1974, what was the talk back then?
Well, as I say, I think, Jim, people were excited about it, but I don't recall a lot of fanfare in the spring concerning the upcoming fall playoffs. You know, they kind of waited until the fall, and things came out early in the fall with the brackets, et cetera, so everyone had an idea where their conference was going to fall if they were fortunate enough to be to participate and that sort of thing. But in terms of a lot of activity in the spring, I'm sure there was a certain amount of anticipation among coaches, and people knew, had an idea of the relative strength of their particular teams for that fall, and were hopeful that things would go right for them. And we were fortunate enough that things fell into place for us right down the line. So from that standpoint, it worked out well for us.
And I think of that time then. What do you think that really the key piece was that said, hey, we're going to do this. We need this football playoff structure within the IHSA. Was there kind of a key moment in the discussions to say, hey, we got to get this thing implemented and we need to have a system? What really was the determining factor in that, you think?
Well, you know, some of the neighboring states were having playoffs at that point, and the majority of coaches and were involved, and the majority of fans, to be quite honest, were interested in some type of a playoff. But how the immediate structure fell into place, to be quite honest with you, came at a meeting when there was much discussion about it, and Liz Astroth, who was the IHSA director, executive director at that point, reached in his desk and pulled out, said, I've got this plan that looks like it might work, and basically that's the plan they went with, you know. So even though coaches had input, but it was more indirect input, he kind of pulled from conversations with school administrators and with coaches and so forth to where he and the plan worked, let's put it that way.
So I was thinking then, so as the 1973 season ends in high school football, did you know in the fall of that school year that there was going to be, you know, IHSA football playoffs the next school year, or was it a bit later in that school year until the official announcement came?
Well, it was at least in the winter, Jim. I can't recall exactly, but I know prior to spring, we were well aware of the fact that there was going to be a playoff. We didn't, you know, and like I say, we knew how things were going to be bracketed, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of people were apprehensive, but they knew based on what their successes had been in the 73 team and what they had returning and so forth, whether they had a chance to be successful or not. And as I say, it worked out where things worked out well for us, for sure.
So when it started, 5 classes and 16 teams in each class. But the seeding was far different, right? You said predetermined, whatever conference you came out of, that was right. How the bracket was set up?
The brackets were set up and by conferences. I mean, but then you knew what, if you knew probably what your chances of what conference you would be bracketed with, let's put it that way. And as it turned out, in our particular case, we had there were also spots for at large teams. And in 2A level, as it turned out, the two at large teams both came out of our conference, the Little Six Conference, and we were paired up initially with Rova, who was the only team that had beaten us during the year, the only team that had scored on us, to be quite honest with you, at that point. And we were bracketed with them, and Galva was bracketed with Sherrard. And as it turned out, it all fell into place for everybody.
So the newness of it then, in 1974, I'm thinking about when this whole thing started. As kind of a young coach back then at Alexis, what was that really like for you to see that come to fruition and be a part of it and say, hey, we're going to play more than nine games this year because we have the playoffs here in 1974?
Yeah, well, we were excited about it, and the excitement grew as the playoffs went, because what it really did was bond the area and, you know, behind people. And I've told this story many times. There was a fellow who was a great high school sports fan, and I won't mention his name, but he was from Abingdon. And when we played Abingdon, he was the loudest, vociferous person at me during the games and that sort of thing. But as the playoffs went along, he was our biggest supporter, you know, from the sidelines. And so that told me right there how much the area and the fans enjoyed it, you know, and it brought recognition to certain areas, and it brought recognition to conferences, et cetera. And, you know, and people had thought, for instance, that football in the Little Six Conference was good small school football. And as it turned out, that, well, you know, proved to be the case throughout the playoffs for sure.
I like how you describe that Abingdon fan. That's tremendous. So I look then at the system of what it is now, you know, as we enter 2024. Are you happy to see the games return to Hancock Stadium? Now, it's been renovated, of course. When the system started in 1974, Hancock Stadium looked a little, you know, far different. And now they've made the upgrades, and it's back at ISU. Do you think that's the best fit for the IHSA state football finals?
Well, I always liked that place the best myself, I guess probably because that's where we were involved. And yes, it was pretty Spartan in those days. You know, football stadiums weren't set up to play four games in a day, so, and back-to-back, so they had makeshift locker rooms. Our locker room was a cutoff in the Horton Gym part of it. They had a, you know, we didn't really have a true locker room. So, and I'm sure now then that's considerably different. But, and to be honest with you, I was very skeptical when they took it to the University of Illinois, because I thought, particularly for small school football, and that's where my interest lay, was that it would be people would be lost in that place, and they wouldn't get. But as it turned out, that wasn't totally the case. But I like the. It gives more of a small school feeling at ISU, even though it's as a considerably larger stadium now than it was then, for sure. And again, I'm still a small school football person.
So we know now the system is, you know, eight classes, 32 teams per class, 256 qualifiers. And when I look kind of at the history, I know in 85, I think the playoffs were expanded from 16 to 32 teams in each class, and let's see, class 5A and 6A, I know for a short time were moved to Dyke Stadium. Well, then the playoffs were expanded in 80 to six classes, but then right. In 85, it looked like maybe the big expansion occurred from 16 teams to 32 teams right. In each class. And now there's 256 qualifiers. I think that started in 2001. What do you think, when you look back here over the 50 years, what do you think the biggest change has been in this whole thing?
Well, the biggest thing, obviously, is it's got more communities involved. And even the detractors of the eight-class system know that there's no going back, because it's created so much interest in so many different communities that with the additional teams and the additional classes, et cetera, that people are able to grab on to something, even though it's not watered down, because you're still playing people within your size range and so forth. But for the purists, they still like it like it was to start with, to be honest with you. But there aren't many of those people around anymore after 50 years.
Yeah. So I was thinking, too, then, do you draw some similarities with how the eight-man game has evolved with their state tournament series to maybe back in the early 70s when the first IHSA, you know, state series started in 11-man football? You know, do you think there's some fair comparisons there?
Yeah, I would say so. The difference is, of course, that they basically seed themselves based on their records, which they in eight man and they disregard. You know, theoretically, the playoffs were set up where the pairings would be geographically, so to speak, and that's not necessarily the case at all with the eight man. But yeah, there's many comparisons. There's some ground rules that were the same, but there's also some things that they will tweak and have tweaked as they've gone on. And people talk about, you know, some detractors on eight-man football say, well, half of the people get in the playoffs. More than half the people get in the playoffs in 11-man football, yeah. You know. So from that standpoint, it's just the fact that they don't have as many teams to start with. But eight-man is you know, I've obviously paid more attention to it now, but I was an advocate 30 years ago of rather than co-opting to go to something like eight-man football, and people turned their nose up at me. But anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, and I know you've told me that story before. And I tell people, you know, and when I've talked to coaches that have coached in eight-man football, that, you know, they tell me the same thing. I'm like, well, what's the difference? There is no difference. You got to block and tackle if you want to win.
It's a faster game. It's a faster game, and it's, to be quite honest with you, it's saved football in these smaller communities with limited numbers. There's no question about that. I mean, and the best description I can say is the coach told me, he said, you know, they feel just as bad when they lose and just as happy when they win as they did when they were playing 11-man football. And that's what it's about with football, with kids, particularly in small school football.
Yeah,
you know, because they're what people forget is, you know, small schools play football with a bunch of kids that like to play. Big school football play football with some football players.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing about eight man for me, my observation, you know, for the small school, it allows you to have a program where you can have a JV program or a freshman team or whatever. And, you know, those small schools, before they made the decision to go to eight-man, they were playing kids on Friday nights on the varsity level by attrition and attrition only. The kids really weren't earning their spot. They had to play because of the numbers. They didn't have any other kids to play. So, and then if you can't, like I said, I tell people the test for me is if you can't field a JV team in 11-man football, you really need to consider going to eight-man. But I was going to ask you, too, kind of segueing from there, Coach Elder, what do you think the mesh point is then for, you know, this eight-man and then, you know, still right now operating under the auspices of the Illinois Eight-Man Football Association? I think that's what the official name is. And there's always been talk about when will they fall under the umbrella of the Illinois High School Association. So what do you think the answer is to that? And, you know, I always hear a lot of people say, well, should it still be just then eight total classes, one eight-man class, and then seven classes of 11-man football? Or how do you see that? What do you think the best way to do that would be?
Well, basically, I think just the same as other states have done. They've not touched their 11-man playoff at all. They just had a separate playoff for the 8-man, or in some states, 6-man football. And more often than not, there's not enough teams that they have more than one class there. But it's a thing that whether I not knowing much about the inner workings of the whole thing, I do know this. I think there are some schools that are reluctant to get involved until will be reluctant to get involved until it becomes under the auspices of the IHSA, and basically because they take to a degree personal feelings out of the planning structure, let's say, when it's governed by a set of rules such as the other people are governed by in the 11-man football, when they have one governing body that represents all schools.
Well, great to check in with John Elder again, kind of taking a walk down memory lane is again this fall in 2024 will mark the 50th year of the IHSA state football playoff, started in 1974. John Elder, a key part of that process. So a tip of the cap to him. Always great to visit with you, Coach Elder. Thanks for coming on with us today. Greatly appreciate it.
All right, Jim. Thanks. Nice to talk with you.
And you're listening to WRMJ.
Jimmy is the kind of guy that always parks his car in the garage if he hears there's a chance of hail. You know, cautious. Jimmy had a wife, a new baby, and needed insurance, but said, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But then he found out about return of premium term insurance from Country Financial. After 20 years, you get a tax-free lump sum payment of everything you put in. Jimmy liked that. If that sounds like your kind of country, why don't you call your nearest Country Financial representative for all the details on return of premium insurance. Then relax. And have a piece of cake. Jimmy did.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
When it comes to document imaging technology, it's best to deal with a local company. A local company like Office Specialist. Office Specialist has sharp copier printers, color systems, and network printers, all supported by a local do-whatever-it-takes attitude to satisfy you, the customer. Office Specialist puts you, the customer, in charge, so you can make the document imaging decision that's best for your business. Sharp copier printers from Office Specialist. Visit osi.biz.
Are you ready to step into style? Look no further than 6140 Run, your go-to destination for the latest in footwear fashion. Right now, 6140 Run has a great selection of Hey Dude shoes. And here's the kicker. You can buy one pair of Hey Dudes and get the second pair 30% off. Hey Dude shoes are the perfect combination of comfort and trendiness. Don't miss out on the chance to upgrade your shoe game. Visit 6140 Run in Galesburg today to get your pair of Hey Dude shoes.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. He's Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Aledo, and we're Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio. And Jim, not that we've been in a holding pattern, but we've been curious as to what's going to happen with extensions for locations for state tournaments, most notably the boys, and finally some news broke this week. Let's get that info from you, if you would, please.
So the IHSA had a press release this week, and they have announced the extension at the State Farm Center for another 5 years, I think all the way through 2029. And I know we're talking a little bit off the air. I'm a little bit surprised that it's 5 years, but I'm not too surprised. To me, that just says that the state boys basketball tournament is in Champaign to stay after coming back 3 years ago. I thought, I don't know, you know, could momentum be recharged and maybe Peoria could try to get that thing back. A little bit surprised that it's the 5 year extension. Like I said, to me, it appears that state basketball has pretty much found, a home in Champaign, and they're not interested in apparently giving that thing up.
Well, and I tell you what, having the luxury and the privilege of covering the first two state tournaments that returned to Champaign and following the Scales Mound Hornets, I felt like, just from my perspective, that it has found its home, that that was the place for it. And I know, you know, you can talk about Peoria and the downtown location of Carver Arena and some of the amenities that are close by, but I just think that the attitude of everyone involved in hosting the event and the updated remodel State Farm Center made a great combination.
Yeah, I think there's no disputing that. Now, the only thing I would argue a little bit is if you could say Peoria could get the same structure where the state tournament is held for the same weekend for all four classes. They never got to do that. And I think if you have the four state tournament games on that Saturday, the four state title games, I think that would have benefited the cause for Peoria a little bit more. Of course, that's something new with the Champaign getting the state tournament 3 years ago. Now, the big story, though, or the lack of big story, is what's the schedule going to be like, right? That's still the big thing about, you know, these third-place games being played on the same night of the semifinals, and then the early start for the semifinals, I think, at the 9 o'clock hour on the Thursday and Friday of the state tournament. That's been the big criticism. So the IHSA has said we're going to keep the Thursday, Friday, Saturday schedule in terms of the days, but then the format of when the games are going to be played on those said days will be announced in June. So I think there's going to be a change. What that is, I don't know, because if there wouldn't have been a change, the IHSA would have said, hey, we're going to keep it the way it is. But apparently something is going to happen between now and June.
Yes, and I know they've talked to the coaches. I don't know if they've talked to fans or players or anybody else, but I know that they've kind of talked to coaches, and they're trying to get some sort of plan put together, because we all know the downfall of the current situation. You know, those third place games that go late into the night, second game of the day, that's rough. But again, you know, as we've talked in the past about, you know, you're at a Big Ten university, you're not going to be able to get, you know, practice time on the floor there, and you're going to have a limited window to get those games in. How do you do it?
And I think, too, the IHSA indicated in the press release, Brian, that they haven't announced the official extension, but working on it with, what do they call it, CFQ Arena. I guess I'll always refer to it as Redbird Arena on the IHSA campus. But, you know, that's one of the state tournaments, though. They've done a good job of keeping that thing in normal. So, you know, the home is there. But I've always kind of been surprised somebody hasn't stepped up and said, hey, we're going to try and get that thing. And I look at Peoria with the new Renaissance Coliseum where the Bradley women play at. I'm like, would that be maybe a better location? But apparently not. They're working on the extension with Normal, which I think has served the girls' state basketball tournament well.
Yeah, I think, you know, volleyball's there and girls basketball, and I think that's the perfect venue. And I just like Bloomington Normal as an area, and I like the way they kind of roll out the red carpet for those events, and haven't had a chance to, you know, see what they do with football. But, you know, with that being back, I'm sure they do a great job, which you could probably speak to.
All right, so final part of the segment, this is kind of gotcha journalism that I'm going to do with Brian Roush here. So coming up Thursday is the IHSA Bass Fishing Sectional, and there are two pools on the Mississippi River that are serving as Bass Fishing Sectional hosts. Pool 13, which is south of Savannah, is one of the hosts, and then Pool 18, the launch from the New Boston Boat Ramp here in the WMJ listing area. So I'm going to ask Brian Roush, I'm going to force him to pick the winner at the Pool 13 sectional. I'll give you the teams, and you got to pick the winner. Dakota, United Township, Fulton, Galena, Bureau Valley, Moline, Pearl City, Polo, Riverdale, Erie Prophetstown, Rock Island, West Carroll, Newman Central Catholic. Who do you got?
Well, I'm going to go with West Carroll because they have the home water advantage.
You're such a homer for that. And you know what? I'm going the same with the Mercer County Golden Eagles fishing off the Mississippi River backwaters, again, Pool 18. So there you have it. Brian picks West Carroll to come out of the Pool 13 sectional. He's made all the other schools mad there, and I've made all the other schools mad in the Pool 18 sectional. As I say, Mercer County going to win that thing on Thursday. They say the future fishes here. He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I'm Jim Taylor at WMJ Radio in Alito. And this is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Alito, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Big box and online stores seem to have it all, but they have great local customer service and support. When they don't see you face-to-face, how much can they really care or even actually help you? Office Specialists at Advanced Business Systems has it all, too. But they have even more. They see you. They'll take good care of you right here where you live and work for office supplies, furniture, promotional products, IT support, printing, mailing, janitorial supplies, and much more. OSI and Advanced Business Systems are your local partners for everything in the workplace. Visit osi.biz or stop in at Office Specialists in Galesburg and Advanced Business Systems Moline.
Spring is in the air, and it's time to take your workouts outdoors with 6140 Run. Introducing the latest arrivals at 6140 Run, the Brooks Glycerin 21, Mizuno Wave Horizon, and Saucony Ride 17. Whether you're hitting the pavement or tackling the trails, these top-of-the-line running shoes will keep you comfortable every step of the way. Don't let anything hold you back this spring. Take the first step at 6140 Run in Galesburg.
It is the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning. We wind down our final show of April 2024, and we look ahead to next week. Give me the programming rundown again.
Sherrard Ridgewood softball Wednesday, potentially Mercer County West Central softball Thursday.
All right. Two good games.
Should be two good games. Four good teams involved in those two games. We have four sports lines left now for this school
Amazing.
Year.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then the first one next school year, we'll have our annual high school football preview.
Well, we're going to do a special summer edition this year for the first time ever.
If we can try and
we're
going to
do it probably in July. We'll do a summer, midsummer, and see what's going on.
See who we can get on board with us.
All right. We have the Cardinals coming up today.
Yep, 2:10 first pitch, 2:10 broadcast, first pitch at 3:05. Cardinals play the Mets this weekend in New York at Citi Field.
And the Major League Baseball story that's amazing to me is how bad the White Sox are. They're 3-20.
No, they won last night.
Oh, they won?
4-22 now.
That's just amazing how and they have all of those baseball games to still be played.
Well, the Astros aren't
summer.
Much better than them right
They'll
now.
They'll turn it around.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. All right, anything else? What else do I need to mention? Anything else? We got everything else covered.
I think we got everything in. Just again, hopefully we see Logan Lee get drafted today. That'd be pretty cool, you know.
And so the round four begins at 11 o'clock here in about, 30 minutes? About
40 minutes. 38 minutes.
On the clock. Now, you said projected some of the draft analysts say six rounds.
That's what I've
specific
seen,
team or not?
Not really. Just somewhere in the sixth. I wonder, was he a Bears fan growing up, probably?
I really didn't ask him that. I think what did he say? He met with 29 of the teams.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. Well, four more sports lines remaining. We have high school softball on next Wednesday and Thursday, of course, weather permitting. And really this high school sports season starting to wind down here, 2023. Yeah. 2024, get out there and see a ball game, head to a track meet, or go root on the bass fishing kids.
The conference track meets are coming up, as are the sectionals, so those will be big results coming up. And I think, you look at track real quick, I think Sherrard girls track team obviously very good again this year.
And it's weird, though, competing in two-way.
Yeah,
though.
Right. That is going to be a big difference for them.
So that, because that opens, for me, that opens up the 1A.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, that's the people I've talked to, with girls' tracks are the same thing. Like, now it's kind of like anyone can win the sectional, whereas before it was always kind of like, well, Sherrard's going to run away with this thing. So, yeah, it will be interesting. It gives those schools maybe more of an opportunity to win a sectional championship, which is good.
Well, and then too, it's interesting on the boys' side then, because I see Monmouth-Roseville has won a lot of the big invites, but then they're 2A track this year.
Yep.
Too. So that gives, in opportunities. You know, Mercer County's been right there with them. But then the Sherrard boys will be 2A too. So again, conference meets coming up, and then the sectional for girls track, I think a week from Wednesday or a week from Thursday. So that's how fast this school year is starting to wind down.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning. Again, our thanks to the great John Elder. Always great to visit with him, a true Illinois treasure. And Logan Lee as well, a big day for him and his family, and, of course, the Orion Charger and Iowa Hawkeye community as well. For Ty Taylor, this is Jim Taylor, and you're listening to WRMJ.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ. Today's program has been brought to you by 614-0 Run in Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes. Hey Dude Shoes and Birkenstock Sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine Work Boots. Office Specialists in Galesburg, Advanced Business Systems in Moline, your headquarters for office supplies, computer sales and service, phone systems, sharp copiers, promotional materials, and more. And by your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business. The proceeding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice in Western Illinois.